Welcome again to Scots Language Radio. I'm Frieda Morrison, and this is the programme that celebrates having to deal with the Scots language. There's just no time to hang about, so we'll hang in. We've got half a good news about a new wee member of the team. More on that later. In this edition, we're ignoring all the hosting and piochering that's gone on all while the new and forging on with the job. Talking heed of what's gone on in the schools and how the Scots language is being introduced into the curriculum. A lot of folk will be thinking, it's not that long ago, fan, we were getting a row for speaking Scots in the classroom. Now it's changing. And we'll be hearing from one of the Scots language coordinators, Diane Anderson, and teacher Jamie Fairburn from Banff Academy, that's being deemed to change it. And I'm out on the lech lands of Murray, a few miles from Elgin, discovering the secrets of Spiney, and fit an amazing day ahead, discovering the real story of Macbeth and Duncan, and mair forby. But we begin at the Learning Day, at the Conference Centre in Aberdeen, where hundreds of teachers and representatives from just about every educational organisation ever invented. Among the workshops and seminars was our Scots language coordinators Diane Anderson and Simon Hall, having a session about the Scots language and the school curriculum. Well, I had a blither with Diane after the session, but before we spoke about the classroom, I asked Diane the question that we're asked o'er and o'er and o'er again. What is Scots?
Scots is a language with an ancient tradition, often mistakenly thought to be slang or corrupt English. It's nae. It's a different language for English, with a different history. A sister language, so it's got an awful lot in common with English, which is why English speakers can understand it, which is a great advantage, but it can be a disadvantage in awe because folk assume if we can understand it, it's nae a different language.
There's a lot of speak about what's gone into the curriculum now, and this is part of the curriculum. Just explain, what is it that's in the curriculum?
You mean in terms of Scots? Aye. Well, basically, there's a big push I knew to try and develop Scotland as a nation of language speakers. For years and years, we've thought that we've got English, we didn't really need any other language. And the 1+2 initiative is to try and get rid of that. And Mark Burns realised that they can learn language.
1+2 fit, though?
Languages. Ah. So one language at home and then an extra 2 foreign languages on top of that by the end of primary school. So Scots can be part of that, but it's part of the bigger picture, just letting folks see that languages are related to each other, they're different from one another, they can be learnt, they've got rules, they've developed your time, and the mair bairns get their heads round now that, the better they're going to be with literacy in English and in other languages.
But you can, it's going to come up time and time again, folk asking, but what is it?
Well, if it's the language that the Burns have brought to school, 1.5 million speakers according to the last census, then it's the starting point for Burns when they come into education. And for years and years, we tell Burns that they were speaking wrong, that they couldn't do it.
So that puts them at a disadvantage.
And for some Burns, it meant that they didn't learn as well as they could in English. So valuing their language and letting them see that that's all right for certain situations, but you need English as well, can actually empower bairns and make them learn better.
So does this mean that at some stage there's going to be total immersion in Scots?
I dinna think it. I haven't got a crystal ball, so I'm not really that sure. But I think why the world is new, most folk have Scots, and I think 1.5 million's an underestimate. Most folk have Scots to some degree, but we need English. We dinna want to lose the English. We want to keep it going and all. And I personally wouldn't want bairns learning in nothing but Scots. I'd like them to be learning in Scots and in English.
Now, you ken the advantage, you've spoken about the advantage, but what about the other teachers? Are they recognising what the advantages are?
Aye, mair and mair. And I think any teacher that has done a lesson in Scots and seen the bairns that maybe hinna engaged in the past, suddenly realising that they can do it. Any teacher that's been in that situation, and I would argue that's probably most teachers that have taught Scots, will be on board with it because you can see the benefits for these bairns. But for bairns that dinna hae Scots, it's also an advantage because they're learning a new language, they're learning in a new language, bilingualism, it's well documented to be good for you as you're going through life as well as when you're learning. So there are things to be hid for a' the bairns.
But what about resources though, Diane? Is that a problem?
It's nae as muckle of a problem as it ain't was. There's mair and mair resources out there for schools, and that's something that we're working awfu' hard at in our team to try and develop. But, I mean, you use resources for you can get them. Speakers out in the community, ony bit of writing that you can get your hands on. You need to sometimes be creative when you're finding resources, but there are things to be hid, and mair there are published resources to be hid in Scots.
Right, final question. If you were sitting in front of somebody right now, need to be convinced, or they wanted to be convinced about the importance of the Scots language, far would you direct them, or what would you say to them?
Burns is probably the most famous poet in the world, and half of his writing probably is in Scots. How can we possibly educate bairns and have them leave school nae kennin' what a' lang syne means or how to say it? How can we possibly have them nae understanding the rich literature that's out there in their own tongue by bairns and by other writers and a'? How can we possibly let something die that is such a rich, valuable, expressive resource?
Scots Language Coordinator Diane Anderson. And afore we ging into the big school, here's Iron Horse and Ross Kennedy. We a burn song. Fae the CD, the wind shall blow forevermore. This is Duncan Gray.
To woo, ha ha, the wooing oot, unlike your nicht when we were foe. Ha ha, the wooing oot, Maggie Custer, heat for he, Lutus Glens and Uncle Ski, Garber Duncan stand a bee. Ha ha, the wooing oot, Duncan fleeched and Duncan prayed. Ha ha, the wooing oot, Meg was deaf as Ailsa Craig. Ha ha, the wooing oot, Duncan sighed, bit dutton in. Gratisine bit clear and blind, sparkle out an hour lin. Ha ha, the wooing oats. Time and chance are but a tide. Ha ha, the wooing oat. Slighted love is sure to bite. Ha ha, the wooing oat. Shall I like a fool cohe? Far a hearty hizzy dee. She may get to France for me. Ha ha, the wooing oat. Ah, who it comes, the doctors tell. Ha ha, the wooing oat. Meg grew sick as he grew hale. Ha ha, the wooing oat. Something in her bosom rings, bar relief a sigh she brings. Ah, Harine, they spag such things. Ha ha, the wooing oat. Of grace, ha ha, the wooing oat. Maggie's was a pettiest case, ha ha, the wooing oat. Duncan could na be her death, swelling pity smooth as rain. Now the cruising can't he bear, ha ha, the wooing oat. Duncan Gray come here to woo, ha ha, the wooing oat. Under the old neck, we were foe, ha ha, the wooing oat. Maggie Custer, he for he, Lotus Glens and Uncle Ski. God will Duncan stand and be. Ha ha, the wooing oat.
Beautiful. beautiful. What a great arrangement that is. That's Ross Kennedy and Iron Horse with the Burnsong Duncan Gray, recorded in 2003. Gavin Marwick on fiddle and Annie Grace on pipes and whistles, backing and vocals. Stevie Lawrence, Stuart Glasgow. It just doesn't date a classic of its kind. And I'm pleased to say that the days of speaking Scots for a week in the school, reciting and singing Burns poetry and songs, are just about over. Scots is new offered as part of the curriculum. Earlier I was speaking to Diane Anderson about fits happening in primary school as regards Scots, but fit about the secondary classes. Well, Dr. Jamie Fairbairn is Head of Humanities at Banff Academy, teaches geography and the Scots language at the Academy. Jamie was also one of the participants at our Broadcasting in Scots workshop, so I took the opportunity to ask him more about his schoolwork and first about the importance of Scots in the classroom.
Well, I think it's important because it's a language spoken by at least 1.5 million people, as we saw in the census. It's out and about in the local area. I teach at Banff Academy, and a good proportion of the children that I see in front of me will be Scots speakers who speak Scots at home. The fact is that in past years, for speaking Scots, that wouldn't have been an advantage for them at school. Now what we're hoping is that this can be an advantage for them.
But why is it an advantage? If it's happened, if it's changed?
Well, I think that the more languages you can speak, the better. A.L. Kennedy said, "More words give me more paths to and from the hearts of others," which I think is great. Education should be a sort of a conversation between the generations, but why not a conversation between the generations in their own tongue? And I think it's very important for their own self-esteem and their self-worth, and to appreciate that Scots is a cultural jewel and a kist of riches that is around, and they can use it and feel part of it.
Okay, nuts and bolts time. Fit are you dealing with them as part of the curriculum? Fit are you dealing with them in the classroom?
Well, in the classroom we do, there's wonderful poetry and stories about, and we look at those poems and we look at those stories. For example, I got them to have a look at Sheena Blackhall's Winter, the snaz here and all that, and then they look at it, they analyse it, they look at the words they did know, the words they didn't ken, they explore it, and then they try and break it apart and just have a wee look at it. And then they can make a lovely poster about all that and express it in many different ways, as a podcast or an interview or something like that, and just explore the language and just explore the richness of it.
Here's another example. You've seen a few examples we hear there spread out in front of us. There's place names, I suppose, as well, be interesting.
Aye, well, we discovered that a lot of the places around about Banff have names, different names, and that's the names that people actually cry the places. So, for example, Turriff, isn't it Turriff to people from Turriff? It's Turra. And so they've been making signs, and they've been making the signs so accurate they look like real signs, and it's just really powerful to see, for example, Peterhead, Blue Toon, are the other places as well. Gardenston, very few people call Gardenston. They call it Gamery, and the folk for Gamery are the Gamericks, and they are at the school as well. So it kind of, again, gives value to the real names that people actually call these places. Mm-hmm. So they've been doing that. We also had a wee foray into some stories. I've been reading them stories. We get the kids to do a wee project-y so they can go home and investigate an aspect of the Scots language. Mm-hmm. And what they'll tend to do is interview their parents. And there's a lassie did one about the different types of music their parents like. And then they'll gather that and they'll write it out in Scots language itself, so yeah. They're expressing it, you see.
This has opened up another mm-hmm. Bucket or something. Writing it. How do they get on writing Scots?
Well, luckily, the qualification that we have, that the Scottish Qualification Authority has come out with, the Scots Language Award, allows people to investigate their own local dialects. So in the case of Doric, it is very phonetic. So they are allowed to express themselves phonetically as Doric as well. But they ken as dictionaries, and they ken that there are different ways of spelling words around about. So the rule of thumb is use a dictionary. It's taken a lot of time and effort to produce this beautiful dictionaries. Use the first word there. If it's neither one that's local, it'll probably be number two or number three on the list. Use that spelling. But they can explore that. They can express themselves.
Clarify for us then, Jamie. Fits it card? Fit is it in the curriculum? Fits the fits the translation? You say that there's a qualification in Scots language. What is the qualification?
Well, this leads on from the 1+2 at primary school, where they can speak two languages, they can learn two languages, and one of those could be Scots. At secondary school, what's come out is an award. So this is an award. This gives them points, which they can use for later on. And it's a real qualification, the Scots Language Award. It can be done from levels 3 to level 6. Now, level 3 in the new Curriculum for Excellence would be what a first-year pupil might be expecting to reach that level. So it could be anything from first year all the way up to sixth year, so that it would be the equivalent of a higher, for example, level 6, where they could do something in great detail.
The big buzz phrase is normalising the language. How do you normalise it, I suppose, relevant to the 21st century?
Well, I think you just have to use it. I think it is sometimes called the invisible language because it's a language spoken by people at home, but in formal spaces it's not. Mm. It's not written on the wall. You don't come in, a Swedish person coming into the marina in White Hills, doesn't he see fit like, come a wa ben, they see welcome. We need to see Scots out and about there. I think it deserves to be in the media. It deserves to be out and about. It's spoken, so why not have it in newspapers? Why not have it on the radio? Why not have it spoken in schools? It's another way of people expressing themselves. It's another opportunity for learning at school.
You've got, well, as you said yourself, it's a year old. Mm-hmm. Far do you see it gone? Fit could be dealing with, fits the potential.
Well, I'm hoping that in the year to come I'll have two classes. Now this year I've had one class. So if I can get two classes next year, maybe in the year after that I'll get three classes and I can keep growing. What I hope to do is I hope to attract people around about the school. This is a great thing. It's interdisciplinary learning, which embodies the Curriculum for Excellence. If I can get an English teacher interested in it, they could do part of it. I could do the history and development. They could do the understanding communication. We can get other teachers on board interested in this. If we can get that run about the school, then we're going to be in a much stronger position to keep Scots language going and keep it going all the way through. One person alone can't do it.
Nope. Now, speaking on that, or taking that point, there was a hell heezos doing in Edinburgh a couple of weekends ago for the first ever broadcasting in Scots workshop. Who did you get on in that? You were part of that.
I didn't care for what was going to happen at all, but when I went down there, it was absolutely fantastic. It was great to meet such an interesting bunch of people who were interested in the Scots language for different reasons. I was interested for education. There was other folk who were singers, other folk doing a more ethnographic and folklore type of interest in Scots. There were people to do with culture, politics. It was just wonderful to see such interest, but for different points of view. And it gives you confidence that there is this groundswell of interest in the Scots language, in all aspects of society, in all places, in all ages.
Dr. Jamie Fairbairn, head of the Department of Humanities at Banff Academy. Here's another bit of music. This is for the CD, The Gathering, for the Orkney Festival. These are the Polkas.
Thank you.
absolutely lovely. It's the Pokus for the Orkney Festival, the Gathering. And there's a wee bit of mirth going on here because folk are laughing at me. I'm sitting here dancing to keep warm to the Pokus with my bonnet on because the heating's going again. You may know now that I am not sitting here on my lean. I am not alone anymore. But I have my first congratulations to Mark in this programme. And winners of winners, he's back. Off the new wheel bench and onto another bench. He's been recaptured. Welcome back. With Ian Stevie Byrne. And it feels like you've been a long way away for an awful long time. Who you doing?
Nae bad. I was off last time with a sair mouth and now I've got a sair back and a sair front.
Right. Can I make the announcement now? You can help me mark the announcement. This is a very important part of the programme. Born to Enos and Steve at the Royal Infirmary in Edinburgh on the 4th of February 2015 at 7:20, weighing in at 7 pounds 15 ounces, Anna Matilda Wiley Byrne. Family all well. Steve, on behalf of Richie, through there looking after the soon, and myself, were hearty congratulations. And you're looking nae bad. I thought you'd be a bit more kind of ragged about the edges, but have you had any sleep at all this week?
I've had a wee bit. I've had my first shower in a few days this morning.
We're glad about that, me and Richie.
I thought I would do you the favour, you can.
But all things going fine.
Athens, Dean. Aye, nae bad. And we're singing songs. Our favourite song, The News, The Shearing's No For You. So we're starting it off our wheels.
And have you had a musical mobiles out of place, which is getting a good mobile
just
musical
the one
thing?
You might have seen, I was putting a video up on Facebook, and we think that one's been made by Les Dawson. We're going to have to get the file out and tune the wee thing.
It's a tune that's supposed to be playing.
Twinkle, twinkle, little star, but...
Les Dawson style with the bum notes now. I love it, I love it. Okay, I'm going to greet, so I'm going to get on with the music. Here's a lullaby for wee Matilda. This is Ewan McLennan singing Matt Begin's song, Coorie Doon, for Ewan's album Stories Still Untold.
Lie down, my dear, and in your ear to help you close your eyes. I'll sing you a song, a slumber song, a miner's lullaby. Coorie doon, coorie doon, coorie doon, my darling, coorie doon the day. Coorie doon, coorie doon, coorie doon, my darling, coorie doon the day. Your daddy's doon the mine, my darling, doon in the Kirby main. Your daddy's hawking coal, my darling, for his in we win. Coorie doon, coorie doon, coorie doon, my darling, coorie doon the day. Coorie doon, coorie doon, coorie doon, my darling, coorie doon the day. There's darkness in the mine, my darling, darkness dust and damp. But we must have our heat, our lights, our fire and our lamp. Coorie doon, coorie doon, coorie doon, my darling, coorie doon. Coorie doon, coorie doon, coorie doon, my day. Your daddy curries doon, my darling, doon in the 3 foot seam, so you can curry doon, my darling, curry doon and dream. Curry doon, curry doon, curry doon, my darling, curry doon. Curry doon, curry doon, curry doon, my darling, curry doon the day.
For our own new wee Matilda, that's Ewan McLennan singing Coorie Doon for his album Stories Still Untold. A great album that, Steve.
Aye, it's Arthur Bonnie, it's my favourite Ian of the three these time. He's really cracked at this time.
Cracking arrangements, he did. And a lovely song for Matt McGinn, of course, as well.
Now, a wee birdie tells me you might ken one or two things about playing along with Matt McGinn.
Yeah, I think, I can't remember if it fan it was, but when I was still at DC Thompson starting my apprenticeship in a journalist, Matt McGinn, we met up in different concerts. He said, fit a boot backer, Matt, could you be my backer? Little did I ken Abdi else had tried it, but I stuck with it. And he used to just start off on a key, if it ever. He would say, okay, we're in this and see. I ain't bother. But then he would go on to the concert, and after he would go on one song, and any key he picked, so you would never ken fit kind of key he was going to start on. I remember it was a very vivid picture. I still have Archie Fisher killing himself laughing, me on the stage with Matt McGinn at the Salutation Hotel in Perth. And he started off saying, I couldn't find the blooming key he was on. It was an adventure playing with Matt McGinn, but fit a great guy. He was just a great advisor at that time and a great confidant, but sadly missed.
Indeed, and a heck of a songwriter. I mean, the gentleness of that song alongside all the other things he did is amazing.
Red Yo-Yo, the kind of things he can. It was fun, absolute fun. No, my next congratulations is gone to my friend and occasional shepherd, Hector Riddle. Hector won the title Champion of Champions at the Bothy Ballet Competition Finals in Eldon. Nae only is Hector an half a fine singer, an half a good shepherd, he's half a good company. So this is for a CD a few years recorded up in the northeast to gee folk a few songs for that area, most for the Greg Duncan collection. Now this is Hector singing In My Hoose for the CD, The Harvest Sessions. This is one of my favourite Bothy ballads, Neeps to Pluck.
It was on a Mertmas market day, the snow lay on the ground. A farmer, he came up to a lad, and he offered him £10. But mind, you've neeps to pluck and out the muck, and a hunter their jobs for buy. And seeing the gweed wife, she's laid down, you winna mind milking the kye. Ye winna mind milking the kye. Out spoke the lad, oh, he was mad. What was that you said? That you'd mark me a farmer's boy until a dairy maid. Oh, your neeps I'll pluck and your nout I'll muck, and the only their jobs were by. But I'm blessed if I will undertake to milk your bloomin' kye, to milk your bloomin' kye. Oh, had your tongue, the farmer said, and he muck sick as soon. Here, tak the shillin' and say nae mair afore a crood gither's roon. But mind, you've neeps to pluck and out to muck, and a hunter their job for by. And if the gweed wife she gets up, I winna bid ye milk the kye, I winna bid ye milk the kye. That's a' very weel, the laddie said, I've heard that tale afore. But I'm an hame proof than this, afore I enter your door. Oh, your neeps I winna pluck, and your nout I winna muck, and the only their jobs were by. Nor tack in hand to be a dairy maid, a milk your bloomin' kye, or milk your bloomin' kye. I've got what a maid the farmer said, she has the milk as well. Had on, the laddie cried, man, that's another tale. Oh, your neeps a pluck and your nout a muck, and the only their job forby. And if the maid she comes along with me, we'll very soon milk your kye. We'll very soon milk your kye. The laddie arrived with his butcher's foo and a chucky on his back. When he spied the farmer with an awful gleam, hearing a quiet crack. Oh, that'll be the good wife, the laddie said, I'm glad she's nearly done. For I dunno when to start the milking yet, afore I've seen round the town, afore I've seen round the town. My wife's nae better, the farmer said, but this is your dairy maid. She'll help you with the milking, since she's gotten your supper laid. Oh, your neeps you can pluck, and your nout you can muck, and the only their jobs were by. For it's a winner at a woman with a face like that. She doesna put your coos a-dry. She doesna put your coos a-dry.
The bothy ballad champion of champions, Hector Riddle. It's a winner that a wifey with a face like that doesna put your coos a-dry. That's sheer poetry, Steve.
It's epic.
Epic. Congratulations to Hector. Now then, Stephen has returned, and he's got into his rumbling wise again, going into books. And appropriately enough, what you're looking at this time, Steve, is Bairn's traditions. I wonder why.
Inspired in part, actually, by the first time that we went out in the pram and we had a wifey come out to us at the bus stop, put her hand in the pram and a bit of siller into the bairn. Oh. Now, what would you call that?
It could be a Hansel or something.
That's right, aye. So I minded a Hansel when I was growing up in Arbroath, and you know, the traditions, of course, is to give siller to a bairn. We didn't get the whole gamut, because you're meant to put the siller actually not just into the pram, but into the hand of the bairn. Uh-huh. And that kind of foretells if the bairn's going to be lucky with money, or some might say grip it, or if the bairn's not going to be so lucky with their finances. So so we were half a chuff to hear that just out of the blue, and it was actually a fairly young...
A lovely thing to do, though.
Aye, and it was a fairly young woman as well that did it. Mm-hmm. It's something that you would think Mary or my granny's generation would have done, but it's still ongoing there, totally unprompted, so we were chuffed to bits with that. Aye. Some of the folk we've been hanging out with lately would be what you might call a howdy. You can for a howdy is?
No idea.
It's just another word for a midwife. Uh-huh. And some of the traditions in terms of the birth would be that superstitions would dictate you'd hate to have knots and belts and ties in the clothes of the mother. It would hate to be untied. And you would hate to no sit with crossed legs or arms. And you'd hate to have the doors and windows unlocked.
But why?
Well, it's to help the bairn find its way into the world.
Oh, sure.
Oh, good. Aye, aye.
I've never heard that.
And after the bairn arrived, the howdy would then ward off the evil eye by putting a few different things in its mouth. Now, we wouldn't recommend you do this, but whiskey or some butter, a bit of salt, and it would depend on far you come fae. Mm-hmm. And then the women would have to eat 3 spins of oatmeal, made in with water, of course, to fortify the bairn and to bring it luck.
So after she's just given birth,
aye,
right, she eats all this stuff,
aye,
and she's supposed to sit up and just enjoy it.
Indeed, aye, that's a traditional way of doing. So,
moving on quickly, as you say.
Another Ian is the Reverend James Napier, writing in the 1870s. He wrote about the tradition of no cutting bairn's hair after a certain time, and you had to do it behind closed doors, and you had to burn the sweetmans after, so that the witches wouldn't come and use them.
The clippings of the hair?
Clippings of the hair, aye.
The chibbles. So, you've certainly done your homework.
Well, you can.
You've got maybe a file sleepless next to fill in. Rumbling a book in books is just maybe a good idea.
Indeed.
Anything else?
Well, funnily enough, just to kind of say on a personal note, in the family, my wife comes from Germany, and that thing about no cutting the bairn's hair for a certain period of time, it's tradition in Germany not to cut the bairn's hair before its first birthday, so...
You just never came, did you?
Indeed.
You think, well, there's all these bairns going about with great long hair, and you think, fit why? Right. Steve, thank you for that. Now, I've been out in the Lech Lech lands of Murrayshire, a few miles from Elgin, In the company of Jim Royan, apart from being, you know, the best family butchers in the land, Jim is currently chairing a project called The Secrets of Spiney. That is why I joined Jim out in the ruins of Spiney Palace. This used to be the home of the bishops of Elgin. Now, Jim said he was going to take me back to the year 1040, watching the boats coming in into the very spot we were standing on. But I'm standing there at the back of Spiney Palace, looking at trees, nae water, nae a harbour. Jim?
1040, a while back in those days, the sea was coming high in here. At the bottom of this bank, it's about 20 yards away.
But the sea's how many miles away, isn't it?
It's now about 4 miles away. And that is what happened in that previous 500 to 600 years, from about 500 AD. The sea used to come through here, in at Burghead and out at Lossiemouth.
So we've got Lossie...
To the north.
To the north, and we've got the RAF station out there as well.
Correct.
And we've got Burghead over there.
Got Burghead over there to the west.
Right. And Lossiemouth down here to the right.
Aye.
And that was a sea.
That was all sea. Lossie itself was called Cooler Bank, and it was just a wee island, a wee pimple of granite that stuck out to Murray Firth. And between Cowsey, where the lighthouse is now, and Burghead was an island about a mile and a half offshore.
So, would there have been a harbour run about here or not?
Would there have been a...
Harbour.
Well, the harbour was just here. I mean, the fishing port, this is the port of Elgin we're looking at now. It doesn't look like it, but all these years ago, the boats came straight up here. We're standing 2.5 miles away from the centre of Elgin, anew.
Now, you said you've got to stand here and imagine boats coming into the harbour, or just coming into the top of the bit of the headland here.
Aye.
Fit were the boats and far were in them?
Well, there was a lot of boats coming in, but on a particular occasion around September 1040, and that's just an aeroplane coming in.
We've got a lot of them standing here.
1040, if you were there in the morning, out to the dawn light came 5 boats, sailing boats, 250 men. And then the first in, there was a royal pennant flying, and this was King Duncan coming looking for a pitch to have an away fixture with Macbeth.
A real big fecht.
And he came in and he probably moored up who we're looking now, and he and his men hung up the bank here and over to Gaveney Estate, which is just a Hinnis, and he was looking for a bit of land that would be ideal for a fecht. At the same time, Macbeth's spies were watching them, and they hined off to Forres and tell Macbeth that the time had come, and Macbeth rounded up his army and came along the ancient shore.
Right, can we go through the castle wars? Well, not literally through the castle wars, but across the castle here. How many men would have been in there?
Well, as far as we can, and there's a lad called Cameron Taylor that's written a book on the real Macbeth, so he's done the research. It's reckoned about 250 men would have been in Duncan's army, and Duncan was king at that time.
Uh-huh.
But... Macbeth, he had eyes in the crown, and the only way they could sort it out in those days was he had a right good barney. And that's what was about to happen. The battle at Gaveney determined that Macbeth would then claim the title of the king.
Now we're walking through the castle, with the aeroplanes forever in the background, of course. We're walking through the castle towards Elgin.
Elgin's just hanging off to your right here. You're looking more towards Lumbride, and beyond Lumbride you'll see the hills at Mulbane yonder.
So across here on the trees you were saying,
aye,
is this on the right here, would have been where the twa armies met.
Correct. That's where action was.
Nae many folk ken about this, Jim. Am I right in saying that?
Well, the story that most folk ken is the Shakespeare story. Now, that was a bit of fantasy in the part of Willie Shakespeare. The real story is the story that we're discussing just now.
So far one?
Macbeth won. Macbeth killed Duncan. Well, he didn't kill him outright. He mortally wounded him. And it's likely that Duncan was then taken by his men to the castle in Elgin, which was at the top of Lady Hill. It's near there now, but there's ruins. And it's there that Duncan died.
So then we're on to the story that Willie Shakespeare, as you said, kind of got huddled.
Shakespeare stories, he is to do with Cawdor Castle and Gruach, cracking name that. Macbeth's wife, Gruach. He and Herod had her from a man he killed a few years previously. But they stayed in a by the inn at the top of Cluny Hill in Forres. And it was from there that Macbeth came with his army to sort out Duncan here at Bidgavenny. And the Shakespeare story is that Duncan was poisoned in Cawdor Castle.
That's correct.
100 miles from the truth.
100 miles from the truth. So there was just, you can see the wafts of smoke billowing up there. Somebody's got a fiery on.
It could almost have been the campfires of the armies.
It's very atmospheric here. Now, you've got all this history. That's one thing. But fit to be deal with it.
That's a fair question. Now, the story goes back even further, because we now know what Murrisher looked like back in 500 AD, when all that sea came through and created these islands. And then what happened after that was that these environmental things that they talk about these days were happening a long time ago. So the landscape changed quite dramatically. And we need to try and tell the story of that change. And it happened over a period of about 1,200 years. And it got to a stage where most of the water had gone, but there's about 2,500 acres left, still a freshwater loch called the Loch of Spiney.
Pretty boggy ground then.
Very boggy ground.
But it doesn't look boggy ground now.
No, and what happened then was the estate managers in those days got together, and you know this, just about the same time, around 1812, a man called Thomas Telfer, it'll be kent to
was
most
folk. Was he
gone
about then?
He was gone about, he was building a bridge at Craigellachie at that time.
Yeah, good for him.
And if it had email in those days, they would probably emailed him, but they probably sent a man up in a shelter and told him to come down for the weekend, and they wined him and dined him.
Thomas, come on down for the weekend.
Aye.
Right, come and see us.
And they said to him, do you think you could drain this loch for us with some clever ideas? And Telford, being somebody not to resist a real challenge, said, fairly, that'll here go anyway. And he designed a canal system that then effectively drained that whole loch and produced another 2,500 Murrisher acres, where in many cases the barley for the Speyside stills is still coming from.
Jim Ryan, so the real story is out there, and there's mair to come, mair secrets of Spiney. Bide with us. But we hear a wee break for some music, then we'll come back to Spiney part two. This is Gerda Stevenson for her new album, Nicht Touches Day, and this is the All Woman's Song.
Mind runs free, and my legs are spare dances. bairns are awa' their feather tae. The brae we climbed was steep, but time's my ain on the road back doon. It's late, but I'll rant afore sleep. Oh, I hae locht and I hae grat, and I hae green no chances, but noo I'm auld, my mind runs free, and my lichtsome spirit dances. Oh, I hae locht and I hae grat, and I hae green no chances, but noo I'm auld, my mind runs free, and my lichtsome spirit dances.
Gerda Stevenson and the Owl Woman's song for her new album Nicht Touches Day. So back we go to the lech lands of Murray and the Secrets of Spiney. I'm in the company of Jim Royan, chairman of the Secrets of Spiney project. And Jim is guiding me around the area to tell me about some of the historical landmarks, the stories and the places. Now we've just heard about the battle between Macbeth and Duncan, but when we were driving up, Jim was pointing out what looked like canals dug out between other parks around Spiney. A lot of canals. So it's back to Spiney Palace and mere secrets of Spiney. So, when you and me were driving up to Spiney Castle, you were stopping or you were saying, look, there's another bit of the canal. I'm saying, what's he pointing out the canals for? They're about bonny canals. So that fits into the next stage of your master plan, I suppose, to promote Murrayshire.
Aye, well, you see, it's a hell of a good story to tell. And how do you tell it? And you can tell it in lots of different ways. You can write books about it, you can do films about it, you can do plays about it. But actually doing it is much better fun than that. So what we're doing now is putting together a tourist package which allows people in groups of 16 to canoe up the canals and come to in the back door at Spiney Palace from the canal side. Another lot can walk along the ancient shore, and they can come in the front door, and then they can get a trail round the palace itself, and they get a bit of mail and ale if they're half a good. And then the group swap over and they do the story on the way back as well.
So you're actually saying that the drainage system that the Manny Thomas Telford put in place is still operating today?
It's operating more importantly today than ever it did. When you consider the value of the crops that are coming off the land that was reclaimed, it's very significant. And these canals are kept by the heritors of the canal. That's the landowners that border the canal itself. And to tell you the truth, there's a couple of pumping stations in the canals.
And he invented them enough?
Well, near the kind they're there now. Oh. I think the Dutch probably sorted them out in the 50s.
But this is what we're needing now in Britain. Like little canals and tributaries to drain land like this. Because this wouldn't be easy ground to drain because it's very light soil, isn't it?
You're right. They took an awful long time to create the canal. They had a wheen of problems in handy and it took them quite a long time.
How long?
1812 they started, and my understanding is that they didn't get it completed until around 1828.
He's needing to give up easy, is he?
I'm not half sure if he would have had the spade in the hand himself, but he was guiding them along the road or the canal.
This is a great story, isn't it?
Well, it is, and that's just a wee bit of it. When you think of all the other historic sites in Murray and how important Murray was in those days. The Kings and Queens of Scotland came here for Christmas to Elgin Castle.
Mary Queen of Scots came here.
She actually probably that was her bedroom just through the 6-foot wall that we're looking at now.
Because she marched on Huntly, was it?
Some are fairies that went and had a wee bit of sort out there with the Earl of Huntly.
But this is the sort of thing we should be getting Mayo.
Aye, and I think
here in Mayo.
I think we're working on that. I think we're working on that. We don't realise just what's on our doorstep. You see something every day, but you didn't see it. You need to stop and look at it again. And think, gosh, that's something there that's worth looking at. And once you get under the surface of that, mind me, it's a. Well, Aladdin was never around here, other than the pantomime, but there's an Aladdin cave here of historical incidents and personalities and
heritage and culture. Just describe the scene around us, where we are and what you're looking at.
Well, I'm still looking north, and in front of us are what really looks like a ruckle of stains, actually, but they're the old walls of part of the Spiny Palace area. You can see from here that it was a very significant bit of a property, this. And just
how old was it?
Well, we're talking about 1207, and then it was rebuilt again in around 1390, I think it was.
Because you can imagine that the sky hasn't changed that much, and they've got a brilliant light because the sun's just about to dip. Uh-huh. And it's a brisk, spring morning, you might say. Not quite buds in the leaves yet, but quite frosty still. And you can get a sense of what it would have been like a while back then.
I think the thing that you would notice most would be the silence. You know, we've got so much sound contamination these days that very seldom do you get somewhere where it's absolutely silent. And there was no communication as we know it. There wouldn't have been any roads around here that we came. It would have been tracks through trees. There would have been nothing. And nobody would have sent a message very far. You would have sent a message maybe a mile to a neighbour, and then the neighbour would have taken the message another mile to another neighbour. But it was too risky to go too far away from him. Well, we're looking south here, and you've got a skyline, a perfect skyline, pencil sharp, with that motley grey kind of sky behind it. You imagine a couple of horses coming over there with the warriors on it and fully armed, and behind them there would have been the other soldiers, some on foot and some in wee sheltie ponies. And they would be coming towards you.
Scary.
There'd be no warning. No email saying they're on the road.
Jim Ryan, a born storyteller, capturing that special atmosphere that lies within the secrets of Spiny. Now, more about who you can get involved in the tours. The Secret of Spiny tours are being launched at this year's Spirit of Speyside Whiskey Festival, held over the long weekend in May. It's a journey by foot and canoe, as you heard, to tack in what we were speaking about, visit to Spiny Palace and the company of guides. Journey lasting 3 to 3.5 hours on the dates, here they are. On Saturday the 2nd of May and Sunday the 3rd of May. Now to book, ging to the Spirit or Speyside Whiskey Festival website. That's the Spirit or Speyside Whiskey Festival website, and you'll see the points for it says The Secrets of Spiny. Or you can email Jim Ryan at the_Royans@yahoo.com. the_Royans@yahoo.com. And Jim will take bookings himself. And you can book a private group tour now. What a rare idea, Steve. Birthday present, Christmas present, just a day out. I'd like to go, neither of them. Can you see us going up the canals in our canoes? And when I first met Jim, I must tell you about this, when I first met Jim Ryan, I was producing and presenting the farming programme for BBC Radio Scotland, and we were doing it Smithfield Show for the annual cattle show, of course, and I was broadcasting for a 10x8 caravan, the car park in London, you know, and I mind fine Jim Ryan, he was just a star in the market in those days, and he was in the microphone explaining to the Queen Mother what he looked for when he was judging the beasts at the Smithfield Show, and what a superb job he made of that.
Chins.
And that vision still stands out in my mind. Right, now, I could be playing the song The Bonnie Erla Murray next, but I would fit in with it we were speaking about.
The ballads.
But it's a bit dreich. Are you familiar with the song?
I am indeed, aye.
But it was interesting as well that Jim was saying there, we're not just half a good in Scotland at recognising what's right on our doorstep.
Aye. Well, that part of the world, I mean, even a bit further down into the northeast, you know, Aidan McGordon and all these kind of ballads around the time of Mary Queen of Scots and I mean, the ballads are full of this kind of
thing.
Just
stories.
Aye, and they've got the histories, right, in most of them.
Now, the Bonnie Earl of Murray, as you can, is a child ballad that first appeared in print about 1740, I think I reckon it's here, but it's based on the stabbing of James Stuart, the second Earl of Murray, Lord Doon, a son-in-law of the regent, also called James Stuart, just to confuse everybody. So James VI of Scotland suspected Murray had been involved in an attempt on his life through Bothwell. That's the connection with Mary Queen of Scots again. If I confused everybody completely, no, I'm just a bit, probably. Now, James VI issued a warrant for the arrest of Murray in 1592, asking George Gordon, the 6th Earl of Huntly, to ging and get him. And it didn't turn out that way, did it?
Indeed.
It didn't. Huntly being Huntly had a long grudge on Murray and he stabbed Murray to death. And his body, his mother, well, tell if it happened to his body.
Well, it was just, there's a great book actually by a boy called Edward Ives, and you can see a picture of the kind of the death, I don't know, would you cut a death mask or whatever, there's an image of the body, but the wounds and everything on it on the front of the book.
Bits,
aye,
huh?
Jingzo.
And she had him laying, doing in, the, I think it was Holyrood Palace, just laying there on a kind of table for months for Abdi to see his body.
Now here's a wee bit of waff of the serious side of the ballad. Have you ever heard of you can how folk get the words of songs wrong sometimes, like the one I can think of, it's no Scots at all, but you can Jimi Hendrix sang, "Excuse me while I kiss the sky." Mm-hmm. Some folk, "Excuse me while I kiss this guy." Uh-huh. Well, that's called a mondegreen.
A mondegreen.
Aye, and you ken where that comes from?
No.
The Bonnie Earl of Murray. Because the song is, "They hae slain the Earl of Murray and Lady Mondegreen." So that is kent in song and folklore circles.
Are you hearing me on?
No, it's absolutely true. I've got a book in the house called Mondegreens and it's just misheard lyrics all over the place.
My mum was a great fan of Kathleen Ferrier. And for years I thought she was singing about this bairn that was put in the oven. And I thought, my baby's asleep on a sheep in the oven. And what's a bairn and a sheep in the oven? It's a ship on the offing. Is it? I can do my Kathleen Ferrier impersonation, but I winna do it just now. But we'll go back to the Earl of Murray. "Ye healings and ye lowlands, oh, whar hae ye been? They hae slain the Earl of Murray and laid him on the green." I never knew that.
There we go.
I never knew that. I'm not going to play the Bonnie Earl of Murray. Here's another mere cheery bit of music from Murray Green and Anna Massey's album Doubling. This is Miss Proud.
Thank you.
Myra Green on pipes and Anna Massey on banjo from their album Doubling, that was Miss Proud. And one day, Anna, I will manage to give you the footy I took of your granddad, Peter Buchan, out at the Harbour in Peterhead. I promise, again, I've been saying that for ages. And that's just about it for this episode. By do doubt, fae are the piochers, as I was saying, viruses, hosting folk and all that. Keep weel, and we'll meet up again another time. Steve, some mere rumblings for your books before we go.
Aye, just to kind of bookend the merch month since we're into it. The Death of Neil Gow was the first of merch in 1807. Mm. You surely heard of famous Neil, the man that played the fiddle wheel. A wit, he was a canty cheel and dearly loved the whisky o. That was Agnes Lyon's Gow's Farewell to Whisky.
Uh-huh.
And at the back end of the month, we've got around the 29th of March is Fitzcarrad, the first of the borrowing days. We've talked about this last year and I've got a wee bitty here. It's cold weather that comes in at the end of March.
Mm-hmm.
March said to April, I saw three hogs in yonder hill, and if you'll lend me days three, I'll fin a way to gar them dee. The first of them was wind and wheat, the next of them was snaw and sleet, the third of them was sick of freeze, it froze the birds' feet to all the trees.
I saw my first hare. I haven't seen a hare for a long time out in my parks, but it's there, there's a hare out there.
Aye.
The March hare is back, anyway. And if you like, drop us an email. We're on info@scotslanguageradio.com and there's more technical bits, Steve.
Indeed, as usual, you can find us on Facebook. It's rthews.facebook.com/ScotsLanguageRadio. And you can look us up on iTunes and, as I was, give us a wee few stars so right. We can get up the charts.
Right, see me and the loons, Richie or soon sorter, and Stevie the new dad. The new dad? This is Freda Morrison. Bye the new.